You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Like all the films that are in contention for the best international feature film are just trying their best to make me feel like total garbage by the end of it. Every film I've watched so far from the competitors, they're just so heavy.
Did you feel attacked by this title, Justin? I'm just kidding.
You know, I had to wonder, it's just like, they never actually say who is the worst person in the world in this movie, but by the end of the day, it felt like it was me.
No, I think you're right, because I felt like, I think everyone does at certain stages when you know, you do what some of the things that this character has done, and a lot of us have been there, where you do feel like you're the worst person in the world, and I know I've had lots of that in my 20s and early 30s, so hey, it checks.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
I've heard some news outlets say that this is one of the most disturbingly relatable films out there, and I was like, yeah. It does make you unwittingly hold a, it actually unwittingly holds a mirror up to you, and afterwards you're like, oh my god, I guess I have kind of done that, haven't I?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you, as the lady on this podcast too, probably had a little bit extra layer of relatability on that too.
A lady who is hovering around the age of 30 to boot. So yeah.
Is this your story, Melina?
I don't want to confirm or deny, but
I'm like, I just turned 40 last week, so I'm like, you stupid young people. This is like watching this movie. I was like,
yeah, as someone who's, I turned 30 later this month. So this honestly, there are a lot of things that really, really hit home here too in an unfortunate way, let's just say.
Oh boy. Yeah. Well, hey everybody, we are talking about the worst person in the world. Now, this is a Norwegian film, which, okay, don't turn off the podcast just yet. Listen to us. Hear us out.
I think you severely underestimate the audience here.
I'm trying not to, because, you know, we all want to watch our blockbusters. We all want to watch our big, fun comedy films. This, though, is a film from Joachim Trier, who is kind of a rising star when it comes to, you know, Norwegian and Scandinavian films lately. He's done quite a few films that I've heard of and I've heard good things about, but this is the first one I've ever actually seen, because he previously did Reprise, Oslo 31 August, Louder Than Bombs. He did that movie Thelma that came out a few years ago that was kind of a sleeper hit with, like, supernatural films. This is now the conclusion of his, as he, you know, quotey fingers, Oslo trilogy, where they're not actually connected, but they're all centered around similar ideas about life in Oslo and in Norway, kind of thing.
I like the setting of this film. I love the landscape of that city in here, because I don't know that much about Oslo, I mean, as a background, so I thought, you know, it worked pretty well.
Yeah, when I was a missionary, I actually had a companion of mine who was a Norwegian but pure-blooded Sri Lankan as well, and I got to learn a lot about Norway from him.
Wow.
It was actually really, really fascinating. So when I see some of the stuff here, I'm like, yeah, that sounds a lot like what he told me about, kind of thing. But yeah, anyway, we are going to talk about this film, and we'll make it as uplifting as possible, because this film is very heavy, but it's heavy in a good way to make you think about it. And that's what it did for me, Justin Zarian, made me think a lot about things. And over here, we got Frank.
Hey, we love to think about things.
And right now, I'm also thinking about Ryan.
Hey, here to think about things.
Uh-huh. And Melina, are you here to think about things?
What?
You were thinking about Moonfall, weren't you?
Sorry.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just wait for Moonfall.
I was actually thinking about that Rick and Morty joke, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing.
They don't have Halle Berry, though, so.
Ryan, would you like to give a shot at just the gist of what this movie's even about?
This movie is about a character named Julie, who is, and I would call it somewhat like a coming-of-age story, but for like a 30-year-old. And she is living her life in Oslo. She's trying to find a career. She's trying to figure out exactly what she wants to do. And she gets into a relationship with a much older man, and he seems like a kind person. She is really torn between him and a younger man that she meets. And a big part of it is just about her being paralyzed by these choices that she has to make throughout her life and in this really pivotal moment of her life.
You know, and that's the thing with this film is that it's very relatable. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you're not exactly this type of character, you can relate to a lot of the difficulties of, like you said, mm-hmm. making those important decisions, and not just making those decisions, but sticking to decisions. Because that seems to be like her biggest flaw as a person, is that whenever things get tough, it's always easy for her to just decide, should I bail on this, or is there a better alternative that I can look for? And not because she's just trying to be mean, she's human.
She's also really young, and I think that what a lot of people, because I made a lot of similar decisions that she made, because, you know, the universality of this film is so great, and, you know, it transcends, like, you know, sex and race and culture and all that. One of the things that you don't think about when you're Julie's age is that that's the time when you're supposed to make those kinds of decisions and, you know, sort of change your mind. And, you know, for some people don't. Some people, they make a choice in that stage of their life, and that continues all the way through. But a lot of times that doesn't play out. And those are the years when you are supposed to sort of like let yourself wander and drift. But, you know, when you're doing that, when you're in the thick of that, as she is, there is a lot of conflict and a lot of, you know, like mental anguish. And it is really hard, because it is, you know, everything has led up to that moment. The weight is so heavy, even though, I mean, a few years on the line, it was like, well, that was something I had to do. And yeah, I think that's what this movie really, really gets right, I feel.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I really appreciated it, and this is not just me speaking as, you know, a woman, it's not just me speaking as someone who's, you know, approaching 30, but one thing I really loved about it is that I think we've seen so many films that deal with a character who looks back at their life in retrospect and thinks, if I had just made different choices, then everything would have turned out better, or maybe I would be happier than the person I am. I think that this takes something like, Frank, you'll appreciate this, because I don't know if anybody knows this, but Frank is kind of a Michelle Pfeiffer fan. But if you look at
she's okay.
The Age of Innocence,
no, I've never heard that.
Where if you see a character like, she's all right. But if you look at something like The Age of Innocence, which is all about people being stuck with the constraints of society and not having the ability to make their own decisions, I feel like this is almost the antithesis of something like that. This is somebody who is, you know, we would probably label as, you know, flaky and maybe a bit unreliable in the choices mm-hmm. that they make. But that's because for every choice you make or every commitment you make, you are foregoing every other possibility. And I think that that is what terrifies this character the most.
And, you know, that's life. You know, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You make a choice and you are going to forego some of the other, you know, opportunities or, you know, occurrences that might happen.
What helps make this character so human is that this lead actress, Renata Rainsiv, I think it's how you say it, she is really, really good. Like, she won a Cannes
so
acting award for this. She got nominated for a BAFTA just today, honestly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she's really she's really carrying this film on her shoulders quite ably throughout.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I will also say that, I know I said this off mic, but I'm pretty sure that Dakota Johnson actually is a twin. And that
right?
her,
yes.
and
oh,
that her
gosh.
Twin sibling was brought up from infancy in Norway. Because I swear to God, I was like, oh my God, no. Somebody call Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith, because we need to have a conversation.
She'll be in the remake of this movie. Which,
you know. Honestly, entirely possible.
Yeah,
I could see that happening.
I can see it happening too, and I wouldn't mind if they remade it, because I like seeing how stories play out against different cultures. But I think this one is so universal. I don't think there's anyone that can't see themselves at that stage of life,
and
you know, wondering where they fit in and wondering what their pathway is. You know, whether it be professionally, romantically.
Yeah, unless you really just hate reading subtitles, I think you could probably enjoy this story, you know?
I think that's the only way you could argue that they need to do a remake, or that would warrant a remake, because, yeah, this is so universal. I don't think anybody who watches this could ever say that they don't relate to it, even in an indirect way, to where, yeah, it would just be unnecessary mm-hmm. to do it again.
You know, and one thing I will say, too, that I actually like about the universality is that I don't think this movie has a very specific message about what it's talking about, you know, because it covers a lot of topics about womanhood, about parenthood, about being that age in your life kind of thing. And it's not exactly saying anything. It's just posing a lot of very interesting philosophical points about what it means to have this, or what does it mean where at sometimes you may have those choices, then suddenly they're snatched away with you by fate or by something else happening, you know? And it yeah. leaves it very open, but in a way that feels refreshing. It doesn't need to commit to say, this is what the story is about. Because even with the you know, the stuff about being a woman or being feminine kind of thing, there's some maybe potentially conflicting messages about that, but they're both equally valid in how they're presented through Joachim's script here, I would say.
Absolutely.
I mean, I guess there is something of a through line, but it is very much echoes the way, you know, the sort of like turbulence, whether it be, you know, doesn't have to be like, you know, negative turbulence, but the turbulence that you do go through in your 20s when it is, when I mean, life is so episodic during that time. And I love that this was broke up into chapters, because those were all such significant portions of her life that we were being, you know, that were made privy to. And they all contributed to this what I feel was a wholly realized person.
Yeah, it's interesting because it feels like a Woody Allen film, the way it's structured, you know, with these little like vignettes in her life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it literally goes chapter by chapter. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels very, very it feels very literary in that way.
Yeah, what does it say at the start? It's like, it's a story told in 12 chapters, a prologue, and an epilogue. Yeah. That's a
weird challenge. Yeah, okay. Thanks for letting us know, table of contents.
I was going to say, it's a movie with a table of contents. I really wish people would start bringing that back.
They'll at some point they'll just put a table of contents like, okay, minute 47, chapter 4,
time
minute
45.
There's like a page number at the bottom. Yeah.
Can we talk about how amazing the guy
Anders Danielsson Lee? Yeah, he plays Axel, the primary love interest.
How amazing he was.
Yeah, and he's been in all three of these Oslo films that were made by this director, and yeah, he. It's one of those things where while she is really the main focus of the story, he adds so much dimension to all the topics here. Because it's interesting where he's... I love the fact that not only is he a comic book artist, but he's essentially drawing the Norwegian version of Fritz the Cat. Very clearly, that's totally what they're going for. And that actually factors into the theme. The idea about, you know, the same way how Fritz the Cat was very... regressive, aggressive kind of storytelling against the culture and the sensibilities of the time... That's what his thing is about, and that actually plays into some of the conflicts and motifs that are being told through her story, even the way that he interacts with other people, like that freaking podcast radio show that he's defending himself against these very radical feminists against some of the things written in his comic. I'm like,
wow, that was a scene.
Oh, yeah.
One of the many scenes where I was like, I feel incredibly uncomfortable, and that's just because how unbelievably real this feels.
I have seen shows that devolve
you,
just
you,
like
you
that.
Can't do anything but hit pause and give yourself a break, and then, oh, God.
Yeah. But no, he is great. And honestly, he had me on the verge of tears in a couple scenes.
Same.
In the movie too, especially near the end.
Oh, jeez. On the verge of tears? Oh, yeah.
It was so raw.
I'm a robot. I don't cry easy.
Oh. Yeah, well, I think, first of all, this movie has probably one of the, I'm going to call it a film, because it's not a movie, it's a film.
This is cinema.
Moonfall's a movie. Moonfall's a movie. Barely a movie, but it is a movie. But I think this film has one of the, probably one of the best breakup scenes I've ever seen committed to film. It was so real, so natural, so organic, and it was, the emotion was so palpable, and... you know, they don't all end up that way in real life, but that was, it felt like it was so true to life. And I think that's really when she started to grow up a lot, because that was the first time I really saw her have a self-awareness in terms of like, no, I know that this isn't right for me anymore. I know that we are not right for each other anymore. And it was, you know, the way that she finally comes to that realization is told in a very like, pseudo surrealistic way, and a very, very beautiful way, and it comes back around full circle, and when you see her again, she has such clarity and certainty, and it leads into just these two people you know, really truly like bearing their heart and souls to each other in a way they probably hadn't before, or maybe ever. It was so well done. It was so mature. It was so beautiful. It was so poignant. My gosh, it was.
And I liked there was like such a small little detail in that breakup scene that I loved, where Axel was just so paralyzed that he fills up a cup of water almost like just instinctively, like just because he's holding it, and then like dumps it out, And like, I don't know why, like, just that detail just felt so real to me. Like, so I think everyone's had, I don't know, like really difficult conversation or just like a hard moment with someone where they've just, you just kind of like robotically do something to kind of get your mind off of it. Or like, you're not even thinking, he's just kind of like going through the motions, just mindlessly doing something. Like, I don't know. I thought that
something to hold on to, something physical to
something
hold.
Something to occupy you so that in this moment where your heart's being broken, you don't have to look at the person.
Yeah.
And then when he has to actually, then when the glass is full and he actually looks down and he's like, yeah, I don't want this. That details like that throughout were incredible to me. But one thing that really stuck out in that breakup scene for me was that it really feels like they go through the five stages of grief. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of something coming to an end to where neither of them, even as she's the one who's initiating it, neither of them really want to admit what's going on. They both want to deny. Then, of course, they go through the angry phase where they're throwing invectives at each other and they're blaming each other and drudging up, as they say, every argument we've ever had. Yep. And then at the end, it's like, at the end, they come to that level of acceptance where it's like, okay, you know, I don't want this, and I know that I know that this is going to hurt, but that's exactly why I need to do it.
Yep. And that's one of those things where that scene just goes on and on, but in a good way, where you're just like, oh, every second it gets stretched out just feels like it's just more and more tension, you know, before it finally releases, you know? And that's a great thing, is that this movie knows when to let scenes play out and when to end them. Like,
absolutely.
Some of the chapters in here are ridiculously short. Like, there's that whole thing about, I love how it's titled, Oral Sex in the Age of Me Too. That's like a tiny little vignette that's only like a few minutes long, but everything it said was what needed to be said, and then it was over. Kind of thing, you know?
And it was the most, I think we get the most amount of levity in that chapter. I'm glad that was in there when it was.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that every story is told for exactly as long as it feels to be, it needs to be. You know, and I honestly don't know what else I can say in terms of other things to praise, because, I mean, it's got a really good soundtrack, a lot of indie rock and classic rock kind of stuff there, too.
Cinematography is really great in this.
Yeah, it's good in the way that it's not overdone. It's just a very nice, clean-looking movie throughout it, kind of thing.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, the acting is really good from just about everybody. Like, it's mostly Renata Anders and then this other guy, Herbert Nordrum, as the other boyfriend that she meets, kind of thing, but... You know, everyone's solid in their bit parts that they have to do throughout the film, too.
One thing I wanted to touch on real quick that I thought really gave you a sense of who this character was, because the movie is called The Worst Person in the World, and it's very clear that the director does not want you to feel that way about this person. And I think one of the things that comes to light is the relationship that she has, that we discover with her father, which...
Oh.
I don't know about you, but that was one of the most heartbreaking scenes I've seen in a while, and they do it all through what the people are not saying to each other, to where you get a gist of exactly what's going on and what that relationship is made of, and why and how that is very much invoking, but how that is contributing to her fear of commitment and her inability to stick to a choice once she's made one.
Yep. And it's funny where they do that so subtly for that scene, where it's just very like, it's just understood, everything that's a problem, that relationship. And then they just put it way out on the surface there with that one scene. I don't want to spoil it in case that's going to be someone's rating at the end. But that one scene, I'm just going to say magic mushrooms get involved. And they make it very clear how she feels. You know, they spell it out for you right there.
It's imaginative, that scene. It's a really great sequence.
Why don't we wind down to final thoughts then? Because I think we've said quite a bit about this, and there's still a lot that I feel like the viewer should just discover it. You know, they need to engage with it, and it's a good film to just kind of, you know, obviously go in with an open mind, go in knowing that it'll make you think and maybe not feel the best near the end. It's pretty heavy, but it's not there to ruin your day.
And it won't. It won't.
I think this really, like, definitely struck a chord with me, and I think it'll hit a lot of people who are in their 20s, like a lot of millennials, you know? It really captures that, I think, even if you haven't done all of the things that these characters do or made all the decisions that these characters make, I think it just really captures that sense of kind of listlessness that you feel sometimes. And just, I don't know, like there are so many decisions that you make in your 20s that can feel just very paralyzing. And even in retrospect, you second guess yourself and you're not sure about it. And I think this movie like encapsulates that feeling really, really well. I think in a big part of why it does that so well is just because of how, like, sort of cataclysmic some of the consequences at the very, very end are. There's some really, really rough things, like revelations that come about in the third act. And I think that that just makes the decisions that she's made just feel, even though it's not, everything isn't necessarily her fault. It's just that indecisiveness that's sort of the worst thing that she does. It still kind of feel like, to her, I'm sure it feels like her fault. And I think everyone can relate to that. And that's why, like, it's just, it's such a tough watch. And it's honestly kind of a horror movie in a way because of that. Or at least it felt like that to me at the end, just, you know, facing the consequences of your actions, even if you didn't you aren't necessarily the worst person in the world. And you're just a person making relatively normal, if not like maybe a little skeevy decisions. But I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 photos that you're editing sadly in your apartment after a set photography gig, which is definitely something that I have not done before.
If I have not made this clear, I loved this movie. And it's one that I didn't know if I was going to love. I was hoping I would, and I absolutely did, but not for the reasons I thought I would. This is, despite what I thought going in, an extremely, almost hauntingly relatable film. And one that, Justin, as you were saying, it's not telling you, it doesn't have a clear mission statement, but it does know exactly what it wants to say. And you, I don't think any two people who watch this won't take something personal from it that they can extrapolate from their own life. I think, yeah, at the end of the day, this is a beautiful story about ultimately what it is to make a choice and how if you are, as the character says, in the passenger seat of your own life, it doesn't matter who you're with or what you do or what you study. You know, that the thing that's going to put you in charge of your own life and make you the author of your own life and your choices, that has to come from you. And I think that that's something that a lot of people probably need to be reminded of from time to time, including myself. What the hell do I know? I'm just a sub 30 person still trying to figure out their way in the world. So I am going to give this 9 out of 10 identical windbreakers.
That was a big fuck you.
Wasn't that was it? The biggest like, fuck like, you.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that like ripped my heart out, man. But then until what happens later in that scene, it's like, well, geez. It is very heavy. We've said it's very heavy. At the same time, I don't know if I would call it, if someone would ask me if it was sad or depressing, I don't know if I could label it that, as that, because it is so enriching and it is so beautiful. It is very, very slice of life for me, and I love that because it's so hard to pull what is largely a plotless movie off, because it rests so much on the characters. And thankfully we have a protagonist here that is not cookie cutter really at all. As much as what she does is so universal, she's such a unique individual, and I love that this director allowed her to wrote her to be flawed. I love seeing movies and stories that aren't dealing with anything close to my world, that I love seeing other people's social experiences. I love going into, you know, other pockets of society that I know nothing about, but there is something about seeing your experiences, your past experiences reflected on screen that can be so cathartic and really, really touching to you in a very personal way. And I think this movie knows that. It does that so well. Like we said, the acting is great. I think it's beautifully shot. I think the colors of this movie really play well against some of the more emotional and sensitive elements that this main character is struggling with. I'm really, in a way, I'm kind of sad that I didn't see this before I voted for Best International Film at Austin Film Critics. In a way, I'm kind of glad, because it only made the voting game harder, which it already was, because the foreign film game is so strong this year, in my opinion. But this is definitely one of the year's best, and Yeah, I'm still going to be living with this one for a while, which is the hallmark of a really, really good movie. So I'm going to give this 9 out of 10. I actually scratched that 10 out of 10 because I had no notes. So 10 out of 10 hours I like to spend in the bookstore because I love bookstores. And son of a librarian, I can't help myself. So.
Yeah, you said that before the fact, and I was like, huh, I wonder what he thought.
Yeah, you guys have said pretty much everything I was going to say. I mean, I maybe didn't love it as much as you guys, but like literally by like a half step, where I think my only issue with the film is just that it is very quiet. It does have a few moments where I found myself maybe kind of glancing off to the side from my computer and kind of just like, okay. But then it would almost immediately win me back by something else happening in the movie. So it's really good, well acted, well written, well directed. And honestly, of the films that are competing for the International Feature Oscar this year, because this one's officially Norway's submission, I think this one's my favorite of the one I've seen. Because Hero was pretty good. It's just incredibly dour and incredibly soul-crushing. And The Hand of God is pretty good, just I didn't resonate as much with the story there. This one, I felt like it did everything just right for what I look for in a movie. It made me think a lot about movies like Another Round last year. Now, having said that, I have not seen Drive My Car, so I need to see that before I can actually make a full assessment of it. Okay, Frank is giving me the very big thumbs up, yes, go watch it, so.
Yes.
But
before bed.
But until I see Drive My Car, this is currently my favorite of the films I saw this year for International Feature. So I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10 bloody tampons.
Oh, jeez.
There you go.
Yeah, that was a lot in that scene.
Yeah.
And then waking up next morning, I'm like, wow.
Okay. Oh, that bit where you're just like, oh, that wasn't a dream.
Okay. All right, then.
That was that one moment where I was like, I now know significantly fewer people who I would recommend this to.
Yeah.
Just cut your audience in half.
Yeah, just a warning for people. They're as nice and squeaky clean as it seems on the surface with the clean cinematography and colors, it has some stuff like that. It's also European, so expect some boobage throughout it kind of thing. And animated buttholes as well.
Oh, God.
Didn't expect that one.